The morning of May 25th, 1979 was hectic at the New York City home of Stanley and Julie Potts. They lived in a converted loft in Manhattan's Soho District, pioneers in a section of the city that would later become the place to be for New York trendsetters. Stanley Potts, a photographer, and his wife Julie lived in a loft on Prince Street with their three children, Shira, then age 8, Eaton, 6, and Ari, 2. Julie ran a daycare center out of her home. On the morning of May 25th, as was her routine, Julie got her own children ready for the day as she prepared for the 14 preschoolers she cared for. As Julie dished out breakfast for her family, little Eaton started agitating to walk himself to the bus stop again. He'd been asking if he could do so for some time now. A 6-week school bus strike had just ended. The buses were scheduled to resume service that day. During the strike, the Pottses had hired a woman to walk Eaton to school, but now that the buses were back, Eaton pleaded with his parents to let him walk the 2 blocks to the bus stop by himself. Eaton was a good boy, and it was a close-knit neighborhood where the residents watched out for their children. So the Pottses gave in and told him he could walk to the bus stop like a big boy. Eaton was elated. He was dressed all in blue that day, blue pants, blue corduroy jacket, and blue sneakers with distinctive fluorescent stripes along the sides. He carried a blue cloth bag with an elephant pattern on the fabric. And as usual, he was wearing his future flight captain pilot's hat. He pulled it down low over his brow, shading his blue eyes. He wore his prized cap all the time, even to bed. He'd bought it at an outdoor flea market for 10 cents. Julie took Eaton downstairs to the street and gave him a dollar for a soft drink at the local bodega. It was a misty morning and the pavement was wet. Julie watched Eaton as he started his big journey, 2 short blocks to the corner of Prince and West Broadway where the bus would pick him up. She kept her eye on him as he proceeded to the first corner at Wooster Street. After he crossed, Julie went back upstairs, confident that Eaton could make it the rest of the way by himself. It was just 150 feet to the bus stop. A woman who lived nearby saw Eaton as he stood at the corner of Wooster and Prince, a relatively quiet intersection, as he waited to cross. A mailman also saw him at that intersection. They were the last people known to see Eaton Potts. By a show of hands, how many of you know who Eaton Potts is? Eaton Potts was the first child ever put on the back of a milk carton. If you have no idea what I'm talking about milk cartons, starting in 1979, children that went missing were often put on the back of a milk carton to raise the awareness of people about a missing child. It was kind of the 1979 version of an Amber Alert. But after a while, we stopped paying attention to our milk cartons. We might glance at the milk carton, but then go right back to pouring the milk on our cereal and then putting the missing child back in the refrigerator. I remember when people first started getting car alarms put into their cars. And a car alarm would go off in a parking lot, and we'd stop what we were doing to look to see if everything was okay. Nowadays, you hear a car alarm, and our immediate reaction is, I wish that idiot would learn how to work his car. Turn the stupid thing off. You drive through a busy intersection, and standing on the corner of an intersection is an individual with a cardboard sign asking for help. If we notice, our usual response is to simply pass judgment on that individual. But most of the time we don't even notice because we've become so gifted at averting our eyes so as not to make eye contact with anyone with a cardboard sign. When did we become such a calloused people? When did we stop caring about people? Now, in all fairness, but that's not fair, Mike. We care. True, we're very good about caring for people that we know. When did we stop caring for the other people? There was a study done a handful of years ago regarding altruism. Altruism being helping somebody out without any expectation of them returning the favor or doing something for you. Altruism, just helping people because they need help. It was assumed for generation upon generation that altruism was a uniquely human characteristic. Until a couple of years ago when they did a study on altruism using small children and chimpanzees. And in the study, there would be a small child, just a couple of years old, in a room with a researcher, and the researcher would be playing with blocks. And then the researcher would knock over the blocks and then pretend that he could not reach the blocks. And we're just going to go, And what they found was the small child would stop what the small child was doing, would go over, help the individual with the blocks. Altruism. But then they did the exact same study with chimpanzees. Guess what they discovered? The researcher would knock over the blocks, kind of do this, and the chimpanzees would stop, would go over, and would help with the blocks. Apparently, chimpanzees showed the signs of altruism. Further studies went on to discover that as children got older and older, they became less likely to help out with the blocks. As a human being gets older, they become more jaded and less likely to show signs of altruism. And I'm sitting there reading this study, and I thought, you know, chimpanzees are not evolving, but apparently humanity is devolving. And by the time I finished the study, I said to myself, I want to be a chimp. When my daughters were younger and they would show signs of self-centeredness, because let's be honest, most teenagers' worldview extends about as far as the mirror. All fairness being told, you're not any different from teenagers. Most people's worldview extends about as far as their mirror. But when my daughters would begin to show signs of just self-centeredness, I would look at them and say, with no sarcasm at all, apparently Copernicus was wrong. Copernicus said the sun was the center of the universe. Apparently you are. Like I said, we're not much different from any teenager. Handful of years ago, I took a group of high school kids. There are about 40 kids, and I took them to downtown Seattle. We dropped them off in Pioneer Square. If you know anything about Seattle, Pioneer Square is almost 365 days of the year filled with the homeless and hurting. And we divided up our group of about 40 high school kids into groups of about four and gave them some sack lunches and then gave them the following instructions. Go feed somebody, but it is illegal to simply drop a lunch and leave. What you need to do is if you're going to give someone a lunch, you need to engage in conversation with that individual. You need to look that individual in the eye. You need to learn their name, learn their story. Spend time with the person. So they did this for about 3+ hours. And then we met up in one corner of Pioneer Square to debrief what we'd experienced. And I said, come on, come follow me. And we went walking just a few blocks to the Seattle Museum of Art. When we got outside the Seattle Museum of Art, I got these 40 high school kids. They all kind of look at me and go, what are we doing here? At that time, there was an exhibit in the Seattle Museum of Art from Leonardo da Vinci. And I said, inside of this building are works of art that people will say are priceless works of art. But I tell you this, there's not one thing in this building that comes close to the value of a single individual you came in contact with today. If you add up the value of everything in the Seattle Museum of Art, it is less than the value of the one person you talk to today, because every person you talk to today had the Imago Dei, which is Latin for the image of God. Every individual that they handed a lunch to that day was created in the image of God. I love the way that singer-songwriter Chris Rice says it. He says, every morning as I look in the mirror, I wrestle with the image of deity. He wrestles with the reality that he too was created in the image of God. I love the way that Donald Miller, he's one of my favorite writers, he said three simple words in one of his books. And as I read those three words, I went, that's what we've forgotten. He wrote, other people exist. Other people exist. I'm going to show you guys and play for you guys a song. It's by a group called Lost and Found. It's just this duo that's a little offbeat. And this one particular song, I heard them perform years ago, and it brought me to tears. And so we're going to show you the two of them singing, and Daryl put the words of the song so you can follow along. Listen and look at the words of the song, Baby, and remember these words, other people exist. Go ahead and take a look.
Her shaven head and her piercing nose, her big Rottweilers and her tie-dye clothes, her Dr. Martens with her biker tights, long black leggings on a hot summer night. Nobody calls her baby. Nobody says I love you so. Nobody calls her baby. I guess she'll never know. His working boots and flannel shirts, his sympathies buried as deep as his hurts. Long, lonely walks with nowhere to go, and his only appointments with a TV show. Nobody calls you baby. Nobody says I love you so. Nobody calls you baby. I guess he'll never know. 80 pounds, she's hardly whole. She's losing her body to gain some control. Hours alone in some tanning salon, and trying a smaller and smaller size on. Nobody calls her baby. Nobody says I love you so. Nobody calls her baby. I guess she'll never know. His pinstripe suit, his wingtip shoes, on top computer, Wall Street news. He makes his plane and keeps his pace, and hides his pain behind a poker face. Nobody calls him baby. Nobody says I love him so. Nobody calls him baby. I guess he'll never know. Yeah, but somebody loves those babies. Somebody loves what we can't see. And somebody told them maybe those babies would be free.
Nobody calls them baby. Nobody says, I love you so. Nobody calls them baby. I guess they'll never know. Friends, we live in a world of milk cartons, car alarms, and cardboard signs. We live in a world where people are truly lost. A world where people's hope is being stolen. A world where people are asking for help. We live in a world filled with people that have forgotten, or maybe never knew, that they were created in the image of a loving God and are of immense value and beauty. But nobody calls them baby. Nobody says, I love you so. Nobody calls them baby. I guess they'll never know. And I wonder, as a church, what are we going to do about that? The final words of Jesus, as recorded in the Gospel of Matthew and in the book of Acts, the final words of Jesus were these: Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Go and make disciples. When Jesus says this, he's talking to his disciples, the people that he had spent 3 years with. And so he's telling them, do for others what I have just done for you. I spent the last 3 years with you, walking alongside you, caring for you, teaching for you. Now you go do the same thing. Go and make disciples. And you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. That's out of Acts chapter 1. You will be my witnesses. You will bear witness to the reality. This is what Jesus is saying. You will bear witness to the reality of me. That I have come, what I have taught, what I have done, the life I lived, the death I died, and the reality of my resurrection. Bear witness to the fact that because I have come, everything has changed. You will bear witness to that. When you live out the great commandment to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, when you live that kind of life, you bear witness to the reality of who Jesus is and what he has done. And Jesus says, go bear witness to the reality of who I am locally, regionally, and to the ends of the earth. Did they do it? Yes. They shared the good news in Jerusalem. They went out into Judea, Samaria, and they went to the very ends of their known world. They went into northern Africa. They went as far east as India. They went throughout the northern Mediterranean. Go and make disciples of all nations and bear witness to who I am. They did it. How about us? Will we live courageously into and out of the Great Commission? Now, before we answer that, because we're in church and we know the answer is yes, but before we answer it, there's another question that needs to be asked. And that question is this: is there really a need in our community to live into and out of the Great Commission, to go and make disciples and to be his witnesses? I mean, because let's be honest. You know, when I first came to Rockland, my wife and I had our secret stealth visit in July. We snuck into town and we drove in on Highway 65. And as soon as we got onto Highway 65, we noticed there's this huge church with ginormous crosses right off of 65. And then you get off of 65 and you drive over and you go up a hill and there's this other huge church. I mean, it's ginormous. And we already knew about Bayside and the other Bayside campuses. And you drive around this area and it's really hard to go past a single block without seeing a church. I mean, is there really a need in our community to live courageously into and out of the Great Commission to go and make disciples? Well, let's just do the math, shall we? I was a history major, so you're going to have to be careful with this math. If you add up the populations of Rockland, Roseville, Lincoln, Loomis, and Granite Bay, you've got roughly 300,000 people. On a given Sunday or on a given weekend, how many of those 300,000 people are in a church where they're worshiping in some way, shape, or form, or are regularly hearing the good news of Jesus Christ? Well, if you add up just the people that are going to the really big churches, on a given weekend, you're looking at about 30,000 people that are in church worshiping. If you then added up all the rest of the churches, the smaller churches, you know, kind of like ours, how many of those people are there? You're probably looking at about 20,000 people. And you might be thinking, wait a second, Mike, I think you are completely underestimating the impact the small church is making in our larger community. I don't think I am, but for the giving the small church the benefit of the doubt and to make my math way easier, let's say that there are, on a given weekend, 30,000 people in the large churches in Rockland, Roseville, Lincoln, Loomis, Granite Bay, and there's another 30,000 people in the smaller churches in Rockland, Roseville, Lincoln, Loomis, and Granite Bay. Well, that means that for every one person sitting in church this morning in our community, there are four people that are not. That's just the math. One out of five. That's 20%. In baseball terminology, we're hitting on our best day 200. That's the Mendoza line. If you're not familiar with the Mendoza line, if you're not a baseball person, I love the definition of the Mendoza line in Wikipedia. The Mendoza line is an expression in baseball in the United States deriving from the name of shortstop player Mario Mendoza, whose batting average is taken to define the threshold of incompetent hitting. The cutoff point is most often said to be 200. And when a position player's batting average falls below that level, the player is said to be below the Mendoza line. This is often thought of as the offensive threshold below which a player's presence in Major League Baseball cannot be justified, regardless of his defensive abilities. And the church in Rockland, Roseville, Lincoln, Loomis, Granite Bay, on its best day, is hitting 200. Could it be said that the church has become irrelevant based upon our incompetence? On a given Sunday morning, there are 250,000 people in our larger community that are not worshiping Jesus Christ, that are not hearing regularly the good news of Jesus Christ. And I wonder what we're going to do about it. Now, in all fairness, is it Community Covenant Church's responsibility to reach those missing 250,000? No and yes. No, it is the larger church's responsibility to reach that 250,000 people. But we're part of that church. And let's be honest, to do that, to reach out to these folk, I mean, it will require a lot of work. It will most likely mean that we'll experience rejection, we'll be ridiculed. It would mean that we'll have to sacrifice. We might have to sacrifice some of our preferences. It might take us to places of humility that are tremendously uncomfortable. And let's be honest, it'll be a whole lot easier to simply look to these four and say, to hell with them. Unfortunately, in this context, that phrase is far more literal than we like to acknowledge. So, will Community Covenant Church live courageously into and out of the Great Commission calling us to go and make disciples and to bear witness in our Jerusalem? Just so you know, this is not a church growth sermon. This is a church faithfulness sermon. This is a church obedience sermon. I have told you multiple times in my 2+ months here that I am far less concerned about being successful than I am about being faithful. This is about actually taking the words that Jesus has said to go and go, to bear witness and then to bear witness. So what can we as a church do to live courageously into and out of the Great Commission to go and make disciples? Well, I know this is going to be shocking to you. I've got a couple ideas. There's a couple of things that we can be doing here. Here's one. We can show up on time. Church at Community Covenant Church starts at 10 o'clock. I know this is news to many of you that church begins at 10 o'clock. And you might be thinking, wait, why is it so important to be on time? Well, in part because I got issues with being on time. But the real reason showing up on time is important if we're going to care about other people. Visitors show up on time. They find out one way or the other that church at Community Covenant Church begins at 10. And so a visitor will show up by 10. And they'll be sitting in here. This might be the first Sunday since I got here on November 2nd, that I have not had one of my friends or family members coming and visiting. Every Sunday, I've had a visitor here. And after every Sunday that I've had a visitor here, I will talk with my friend or family member and just ask their impressions about Community Covenant Church. What'd you notice? What seems important to this church, just from your observation? It's a really good discipline to do. And every one of them has said, Mike, your church is so friendly. And it's true. You're a friendly group of people. But I got to tell you what happened a couple of weeks ago. I had a friend come. My friend came. My friend was warmly greeted out there. All our friendliness just all around her. Well, it was time for church to start, and she came in because church started at, I'm just going to have you repeat that multiple times. She came in and sat down all by herself. And my friend who visited our church was left all alone. We were so busy being friendly out there that we let a visitor sit completely alone. I ended up having to go get my wife and ask her, I go, will you go sit with her so she's not all by herself? By the way, that friend has not been back. I had someone tell me a while ago, people are not looking for a friendly church. They're looking for friends. That's different. It's good that we're friendly. But people aren't looking for friendly. They're looking for friends. That takes far more sacrifice on our end. It requires us to be present with them, not just in a lobby. Something else that maybe we can do that might be helpful. We might change our bulletin. And you might be thinking, why? I love our bulletin. When my wife and I put our house on the market, right at the very beginning of September, our realtor came to our house, walked through our house, sits down with us, and then tells us what we need to do to our house to make it more appealing to someone coming into the house. The first thing she said to us, you have to declutter your house. To which my wife and I were slightly offended. We like our house. We keep a clean house, but the reality is we've been in that clean house for 16 and a half years, and we ceased to notice the clutter. I don't know how long you've been living in this bulletin, but I got news for you. If a new person showed up at our church and looked at this, they'd just kind of go. Don't be surprised if there's some changes to this, because the people in seats 1, 2, 4, and 5 are really important, and we'll go to great lengths to make sure that they get into a house that resonates with them. Now, that being said, we're going to continue to get all the information to you. We'll continue to send out the Wednesday email that's full of information. We'll probably have a big information page that's got all of this and more available right outside. And I had somebody ask me one time, they go, wait a second, why should we make the regular attenders work harder to get the information than the visitors? Let's just make the commitment that we'll work a little harder so that a visitor is more embraced. The website will probably change. I can think of two things that need to be done to our website. Gasoline and a match. I think that'll do it. For a lot of people, the front door to the church now is a website. Our website, let's just say gasoline and a match might be put to it so that we can be more intentional about how we are going to care for seats 1, 2, 4, and 5. But I mean, I'll be tremendously honest with you. Showing up on time and changing a bulletin or a website is not the answer. You are. You are. People will know the good news of Jesus Christ not because of a website or a bulletin or what we start to do right at 10 o'clock. People will know the good news and hear the good news of Jesus Christ when they see it in you. When you are increasingly aware of and committed to caring for these folk. Next week, we're going to be doing a sermon entitled, you've already seen some of the logos, 3-2-1. It's not a program. It's an intentional way of living in relationship with other people. I encourage you, don't miss it. It'll come to define how we are trying to be intentional about the people that God has put in our lives. 3-2-1. We'll be talking about that next week. Please be here for that. And by the way, church next week starts at just, I couldn't resist. As you leave this morning, the ushers are going to have this. We're going to do the offering. We're going to do a song and everything. But when you leave this morning, the ushers in the back are going to have something for you. And this is your homework for the week. As we start to think, how do we make a difference in our world? It's a missing poster. And yes, that is Eaton Potts, the first kid ever on the back of a milk carton. But along with this, on the bottom, there's a couple of things for you and me. I'm going to be doing it too, to be doing this week. It has two quotes on it. One is the quote from Donald Miller. Just, I want you to be thinking about these quotes. Other people exist is the quote from Donald Miller. There's another quote here from the late Keith Green, singer-songwriter Keith Green, who died in a plane crash in the late 70s or early 80s. And he wrote this. This generation of believers that you and me are part of, we are responsible for this generation of souls all over the world. We're responsible for them. We're responsible to pray daily for the needs of ministries around the world and ask God, how about not sending my money this time? How about me going? It is so easy to write checks. It is so easy. But God can't cash out-of-state checks in heaven. He needs you. Two quotes to just read. Okay, what do I do with this? The two verses, the final words of Jesus out of Matthew 28 and Acts chapter 1 are there. And then there's a question to consider. And I really want you to be considering this question this week. Who are the people in your life that are missing, hurting, lost, currently not following Jesus? Who are those people? Last week, when our superintendent was here, he said, we get to love people. I loved how excited he was about that simple phrase. We get to love people. We get to love seats 5 and 4 and 3 and 2 and 1. We get to love people. That excites me. And I hope it excites you. I got a card from someone last week that just, it made my day. This person just gave me a card and said, Dear Pastor Mike and Jen, this was to you too, huh? And I just haven't read it to you yet, so here you go. We are praying that God will bless your ministry here, and we are happy that you have made the decision to come to Community Covenant Church. We are praying that with your help, our church will develop a great passion for reaching the people in our community and beyond who need Christ. We are in favor of shaking things up around here. May we be a people that write this kind of card, say, oh my goodness, we want to see an increased passion for reaching the people that are currently not here. We're going to care for the people that are. Absolutely, we're going to care for seat three. But we're always going to be intentional about seats 1, 2, 4, and 5. Would you pray with me, please?